You are listening to Secret Handshake, the podcast covering the movies that help you identify your friends and maybe make a few more along the way. Coming up, Spine number 62, 1990s Class of 1999, and a collection of killer futuristic machines featuring Peeping Toms, Cyber Sex, Multiple Forehead Drills, Dismemberment, Tremor Bots, Peter Weller, Not as RoboCop, Endless Opening Texts, No Less Than Three Grenade Launchers, Flamethrowers, Street Gangs, Shit-Faced Donald Sutherland, The Borg, and Iggy Pop is Angry Bob. Martin.
Yes.
You are virus. Welcome back to another edition of Secret Handshake. I'm your host, Jacob Knight, and joining me as always is Martin Carlson. Martin, you ready to kill some machines?
Absolutely.
Or is it have machines kill us?
Mostly the latter, I think.
How did we land on this? This is a collection of five, let's say, murderous cyborg movies fronted by Class of 1999, a Mark L. Lester joint that both you and I love to death and actually attended a 35mm screening of back in the day, a double feature with The Terminator.
The Terminator. Right? Before we knew each other.
That's what I was going to say, before we even knew we were in the same theater.
We were looking at the same moon.
What a day that was, because, God, both of those movies are fucking awesome. And, like, how many chances do you actually get to see Class of 1999?
On 35mm at the fucking Ritz Theater.
R.I.P.
Yeah. I think the first idea for this came from, I kept wanting to talk about Virus. And I really love Virus. And I hadn't seen it in years, and I've been reconnecting with it over the last year, watched it a couple times. And then we had popped it in, and I think you fell asleep on the couch.
I did. I was very high.
Yeah. And you passed out, and I was like, you really should see this. And then we were thinking of an episode to do, and this seemed very similar to our
Leviathan sea monsters.
Yeah, of just like this kind of subgenre. These types of films, very big in the early 90s. It was these like killer war robots.
Well, and these are all 1990s joints.
Yeah, all of them.
All the way up. You kind of span the whole decade because you start at 1990 with Hardware, the Richard Stanley movie, and then you get to Virus in 1999. So we kind of cover a whole decade's worth of killer robots.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was really fun. And then as we'll get to, we kind of talk about the films. There's so much crossover, like crew wise between these movies. Like it was this kind of weird, again, subgenre, like, or kind of subculture of these guys who were also doing animatronics for films. It's not a huge scene of doing, and a lot of these people had worked for Cameron.
Well, yeah, it's the Cameron school again.
Yeah, so it's Terminator exploitation, but it's also people who worked literally with him as special effects guys.
Well, and that's kind of the other thing I wanted to bring up is that obviously after Terminator and all these guys and Aliens too, because like Stephen Norrington, whose Death Machine we'll cover as well, worked on Aliens.
Yep.
you know, those were big successful films. Cameron kind of starts his own sort of like sci-fi R-rated action movie subgenre, and a bunch of these guys work on them. But at the same time, Terminator was a big financial success. So these movies are kind of chasing that,
yep,
not only theatrically, but also on video. But then, you know, Class of 1999 comes out in 1990 through Vestron Pictures. And the very next year, you get Terminator 2. So, like, that opens the door for even more robot exploitation to kind of happen in the 90s. And I think that's why this episode kind of spans a whole decade, is because right as the gas was basically going to get let out of the tank completely, you know, Terminator 2 comes out and is the biggest movie in the whole world. And then it's like a whole, like, slew of producers come after and they're like, yep, what do? Make more killer robot movies.
Yep, and I think we're both here for it.
Sort of. I think this...
For some of these.
This episode runs the gamut of, like, movies we think are all-timer face melters, movies that we think are diverting, stupid, good times, and then one that's kind of just like a slog that I still sort of enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, I think... one of this is, like, being a mutual favorite of ours, and... Virus is the definition of not just being, you know, a Cameron type film, but it's a total classic survival horror setup, alien ripoff as well. Or it's very similar to Leviathan.
Well, let's start there and go backwards.
Okay, cool.
Let's go with Virus, because Virus, to your point, like Leviathan, is an entry into the why would you board that Russian vessel that's abandoned?
Yep.
And like
very similar setup.
The whole setup, something like that, or Deep Rising is the other movie, yep, I kept thinking of too. But Virus is very much about this incredibly well-cast crew of characters on a salvage vessel with drunk
like,
ass.
Like Ghost Ship.
Yeah, like Ghost Ship as well from our Dark Castle episode. Captained by a very drunk Donald Sutherland who's doing... What's that accent?
I think he's doing an Irish thing, but it seems like he's doing a Bostonian Irish thing. Like he's this American guy, but it comes
like Americanized immigrant thing.
Yeah, it kind of comes and goes, though.
Yeah, but it comes and goes, I think, based on how much he'd imbibed on set that day. Because you pointed out to me that you knew a lot more about this movie.
I know too much about
it. Than I did, because I had never even seen it. I remember coming out in theaters in 1999, but it was just one of those times where there was so much that came out in the theater that year that I had to miss something. And then Virus just kind of passed me by until now at 41 years old. But like... You knew way too much about this movie, and we're talking about it while we were sitting there, and I was dozing off to sleep, and I remember you distinctly saying Donald Sutherland hated working on this movie.
He hated it and was very difficult to work with, and
because he was so drunk,
probably they didn't talk about the alcohol, but he clearly is very glassy eyed in this. But the specific story they talked about, because a lot of the interviews were with the special effects crew, and a lot of them worked with Steve Johnson, who was an amazing effects artist, also known for being quite difficult. And they were interviewing one of the guys specifically about in this film, spoiler, this, you know, alien entity has taken over, its energy has taken over this vessel, and it's trying to make itself these physical bodies to move around in space, and it's usually using robotic parts mixed with human parts. So it's they're Borg. They're full on like Borg.
More or less. Yeah.
And it's a hive mind. It's one mind driving these things.
Well, that's kind of the running theme of this collection of movies too, is that these robots want to become human. And let me ask you, as a human being, I think I would rather be a robot. Why do you think these robots want to be human so bad?
Lazy writing.
Okay.
That's to be too dismissive, but sure. I think it's that very simple thing of I want to have a body too.
The Pinocchio thing.
Yeah, exactly. No, but to finish the story about Sutherland too, and he becomes this, you know, Manborg, and
with half of Donald Sutherland's face.
So it's his face, and then another put on a Russian body. So it's like, it's kind of cool. It's Frankenstein together. There's like, you know, they've sewn his head on, but
he kind of looks like the CD Cenobite from Hellraiser 3.
Yes. And they did this huge prosthetic headpiece on the back of his head where you could see his brain. And they were like, this took like months of planning. And they put it on him, and the whole, obviously it took hours to put this makeup on Donald Sutherland. And
I'm sure he was thrilled.
Complaining the whole time. And he's like, I'm only doing this for one day.
I was a heartthrob in the 70s.
Yeah,
eh?
You see my butt in fucking American in Animal House? And but the thing is, he goes, they do this whole headpiece. They put it on. He goes, I'm going to wear the captain's hat.
I fucked Julie Christie on film. Now I'm a fucking man monster machine.
And I'm going to wear it. But he's like, I'm going to wear the captain's hat. They're like, you can't wear the hat. There's the headpiece. He goes, I want to wear the captain's hat.
I'm a Canadian citizen. I'll do whatever I want.
And it's like, it literally reminds me of like, it's like, you know, Robo on Oreo. He's just like being a real prick. And he's like, and like Steve Johnson on the interview is like, he looks really fucking stupid, but you can't really fight with one of the stars of the movie. But everyone else I heard. So the director, John Bruno, is another alum of working with Cameron, worked on Titanic. Right. And what really stands out is the early scenes of this is during this huge thunderstorm in the ocean. And it looks fantastic.
Yeah, the water tank work is awesome. Well,
and a lot of it's like bigatures, these huge, they built, like they did for The Abyss, these like 20-foot-long miniature boats. And they're doing these, they're simulating these giant like tsunamis. And it looks fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like the detail and... So I just love the look of this movie. I think overall...
Oh, no, it looks incredible. That's the thing about this movie is that the design's cool. The monsters are cool. It's adequately violent. The cast is amazing because you also have Sutherland, Billy Baldwin, which is weird. Yep. Jamie Lee Curtis.
Cliff Curtis
with Maori face tattoos.
And an outfit and a giant like Maori knife.
He looks like a pirate. It's insane.
It's great.
Like, he should work at Disneyland at Pirates of the Caribbean.
He plays the exact same character in Deep Rising.
Yep, pretty much.
The year before or whatever.
But, I mean, it's well cast. It's put together incredible. When the monsters actually show up, the robot, Borg, hybrid things are super cool. There's just nothing else to this movie. It's just dumb B-movie, like, kind of pulp. On an A budget, just about.
No, I think it pairs.
It's Universal,
it
too.
It pairs well with another film from that year, which is Deep Blue Sea. I think it's a very similar film.
Yeah.
Of a
same
really
idea.
Well-made, gory, good monsters, practical effects.
Main difference, Deep Blue Sea has way more of a sense of humor about it.
So absolutely.
This one's a little too po-faced for its own good.
Well, and it's funny because I literally look to my right now. It's a Dark Horse, based on a Dark Horse comic, and the script was written by Chuck Farrar, who wrote
Hard Target,
and also worked on Time Cop, which is a Dark Horse property.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy was known for this pulpy stuff, but you read the comic book, and it's just the characters are just as bland as they are in the film because, like, Jamie Lee Curtis is obviously Ripley. It's the same setup of like she's the smart second in command. Who is...
When she's like, my dad was a corporal in the Navy at one point. I know something about maritime law. Because the other thing is, like, this plot is pretty close to, like, Event Horizon as well.
As is Ghost Ship. It's an idea of just, like, I can't lose this salvage, you know.
The alien, like, blue-collar workers in an unknown environment kind of setup.
Yeah, and it's... But it's just, I mean, again, like you said, like it looks fantastic with the especially the creature design is, it's a smorgasbord of like different monsters. Like there's be like, I think 30 hero monsters in this movie. It's crazy.
That's where all the budget, and that's the whole reason to make this film.
Yeah.
Is because it's more or less a glorified SFX reel.
Yeah,
these guys.
A lot of these are.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, and this one is done just on the highest level and executed really well with stars that we know. And so it just becomes a good 95-minute, like, fun time at the movies.
And it wasn't a complete flop, but it wasn't a hit. And the director talked about it. I think it just kind of torpedoed his chances because it was that opportunity of like,
right,
like
you're
Nori,
making
like,
a feature now.
These guys you've done and you're going to get to make your first, like, hey, I could do this. And he can. I mean, it's a really, again, competently like made movie. Even like the drama, it all makes sense. It's all put together really well. But you said there's just really not much else there.
Yeah,
you know, beneath it all. But for me, like this is a complete This is like, and it's the definition of a dark horse one-off adventure. We talk about that with the Predator movies, you know, just that great, like, simple, bare bones, the classic pulpy monster beats. It works. It's got a little bit of a thing in there as well about what, how does this thing work?
Right, but this biology. Is the movie you make for Corman, not for Universal.
But
you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Well, yeah, like you said, it's elevated B movie fare, which was Cameron's bread and butter too. You know, sure. taking this in as was for Lucas and Spielberg, but obviously this doesn't reach quite those heights of character or any kind of symbolism or subtext.
Speaking of not reaching great heights, do you want to talk about Stephen Norrington's Death Machine real quick?
Yes.
2 hours long, feels like nine. Looks great, doesn't make any sense, and has a cool monster. That's about all I got for you. You want to talk about glorified reels, that's all Death Machine is. And well, you can see why they gave him Blade after this movie.
Well, and it looks like he took, you know, a penny and stretched it into $1 million. I mean, it looks, you can see that it's a small film, but he stretched it to make it look, I mean, again, even on silent, like it just looks like a real fucking movie. And we had talked off mic, you know, very Ridley Scott looking. I mean, it looks like black rain in scenes with like light coming in through like the shades. It's very, also the color palette of T2, blue and steely.
The Blade Runner buildings the and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And, but as you said about Virus being this kind of like, you know, real for special effects guys, this was Norrington. We'll move backwards to, but he did some of the design for Hardware, you right. know, so he, I guess, what, 4 years after working on Hardware and working on the robot, is like, well, I can do this too. And again, honestly, a competently made film. He wrote the script, though. The script is this is quoting you, it's fan fiction. I mean, it,
100%. And I mean, it has an executive played by Richard Brake, which is cool, but he's named Scott Ridley. Come on.
Well, and then there's Carpenter, Raimi, Yutani, Wayland. It's that era of just like, it's like that film geek. Like,
look how cute I am.
Yeah, it's like, God
damn
it. I read
Ain't It Cool News, too.
Yeah. But the monster is really well done. There's a couple of good set pieces. I think the set piece in the elevator where William Hootkins gets it.
Oh yeah.
Is a well done
good and
scene.
Bloody.
Very bloody. Also William Hootkins in Hardware. He's a little bit of connective tissue here.
Very much so.
A much different character in Hardware.
Ooh,
as we'll
very
get to.
Gross.
I like this one. I think it's like you and I are both big Blade fans. I mean, I'm a monster Blade fan. And so for me, it's cool to see what he did before. I'll probably never see this movie again.
God, no.
Like, it's...
Who has the time?
It's just... It's brutally slow.
I mean, you're also a big League of Extraordinary Gentlemen fan.
Absolutely
too.
Not. I am... That movie is garbage.
I remember seeing that in theaters and, like, not thinking it was real.
My mom started laughing uncontrollably.
It's so bad.
She's like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. I'm like, yep.
Now, probably the most contentious movie on this list, or at least our opinions about it are contentious, is Screamers, which was Christian Duguay's, I believe, Canadian produced production. Starring Peter Weller, and it's a Philip K. Dick adaptation, and it's about little armadillo monsters on a planet that, you know what? Here's what I'm going to do. Here's a challenge. Explain the plot of Screamers to me, Martin. Because I just tried, and in my head, my brain literally just short-circuited because I was like, I don't know what happens in this movie.
Okay, I think I'm going to try my best here.
So they're mining on another planet.
So,
and they find ore, which is like...
Well, I think I got it.
Okay.
I'm
trying to feed you.
So they're all part of the NEB, which is this like conglomerate, and they all go to mine on this planet for basically ore, unobtainium. And there's a rift between the workers, I believe, and like
the corporation.
Then the alliance is like, in my mind, it's almost like a union as like a war faction. And they create in the war screamers, which are these armadillo or like they're like little mini tremors. They go under the sand to attack the NEB. They're at constant war on this planet. Then
for 10 years.
For 10 years. Then Weller, who's the head of his like his unit, finds out they've been there's another planet that is also mining the same stuff, and it's like a lot easier there for some reason, and they are basically being cut loose and being basically ignored by like right. upper command. And it's basically them go, I mean, you saw it back and forth between like these different kind of underground bunkers on the planet. Well, and discovering like, that the screamers have started to self-replicate and to self-evolve from these little armadillos to basically Terminators. They're you know, infiltrator
little
units.
Monster children.
Children and adults as yeah. well. Yeah. It's that's the plot. What's really funny about this movie, I realized,
a
is
few things.
Well, the number one thing I realized is this is the best case study for what Dan O'Bannon's Alien would have been if it had been strictly Dan O'Bannon's script.
Ooh, good take.
Because I've read the original script and I've read the comic that's based on it. It's a goddamn mess. I like Dan O'Bannon, but he's not the most structured guy. And he also is very long-winded. And so you're like, it's just kind of all over the place. And with Walter Hill and other people cleaning up,
right.
you know, cleaning up his script and making it really, really kind of sing. But this is that. It's like long-winded. He has all these things. It seems like he has something on his mind. You know, it's trying to be very heavy. It's also trying to be very romantic.
Yeah.
Like it's supposed to build this idea of Weller's character falls in love with a screamer, but she's actually good. And
but we don't know she's a screamer for much of the runtime.
But until the very end.
Yeah.
But yeah, but then you realize she's like the next level of like she has blood, you know, it's again the Terminator thing of like they get more and more difficult.
She's the Daywalker.
Yeah. But and then
it's like human blood and cybernetic heart.
Well, no, she's like I hate bringing this up. She's Sam Worthington in Terminator Salvation. It's the Terminator with the human heart.
I don't remember anything about that movie.
I remember everything about it. What a movie. But this movie, I think you were saying, it's every time I watch it, it makes me feel like I'm kind of going insane.
It's a dream you can't wake up from.
It's just really strange because it's like it's not poorly made. It's just like the scenes go on way too long. The information you need is not given to you.
Well, it becomes Dune
yeah.
for a minute because it's just following Peter Weller and this other soldier from bunker
Who's
to bunker.
Really annoying, that guy.
And on this desert planet, and they'll occasionally fight evil mechanical sandworms, and you're like, this is just C-grade Dune for a minute.
Yeah, it's, and it's unlike, you know, it's interesting to also compare this to the filmmaking of obviously Virus, much bigger budget, I believe, but comparing it to something like Death Machine or like Hardware, both films are filmmakers really stretching their budget to make it look like $1 million. This film is the opposite, where the seams are very clear. It's like,
oh yeah,
it's like big and big and big, but it's like, hey, we found this old like steel factory. We're just going to shoot it and put a couple sci-fi things around. It looks like a fucking bad episode of like Next Generation. Like it looks cheap, but I think it's probably has a bigger budget than Death Machine or Hardware.
Weller's giving it his all as usual, though.
He has a scene, the line that I love is they're hanging around the fire at that, they don't realize that this kid is a screamer, and he picks up what he think is a rock, and it just becomes a bug. He's like, if you're gonna be a rock, not a bug. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? He's that weird Weller from, like, Unknown Origin.
Yeah.
It's that, like, manic
he's
Weller.
He's doing it like it's Shakespeare the whole time.
Well, in the end, where there's this whole, again, romance thing of he's just, like, or when she, it's, what's her name? Lisa Rubin from the third Nightmare on Elm Street.
Right.
And she, like, basically is changing in front of him, not in a sexual way. She's just kind of like, and he's like, God, you're beautiful.
So beautiful.
And I was like, ugh.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. And you have the really the guy from the La Femme Nikita TV show of the 90s.
Yep.
Is the other like kind of main character. I think they're also trying to make him a thing. He's real bad in this movie and really annoying. Just constantly just being like giving shit to all the other characters. And it's just, again, it's O'Bannon. It's a really bad script overall.
Classics Gunner, sir.
It's like, ugh. But
it's weirdly watchable the whole time, though, despite being very boring.
I mean, again, Weller, I think, is like the key.
Yeah.
I think that he's...
Well, it's visually kind of interesting sometimes. Yeah. And
there's some cool sets, like the opening bunker with like the doors. They put some money into it.
Yeah, exactly.
And the screamers look cool. There's some cool stop motion with like the crawling.
Well, that set piece where they pop out and like dismember that dude like piece by piece is pretty great.
That's like the first scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, it hooks you, and you're waiting the whole time being like, where are we going? Are we going to get there? Is it going to be violent again? But it's a lot of talking.
A lot of talking, a lot of walking, like you said. A
lot of opening text, too. There's, like, a novel you have to read before it even starts.
It's, again, it's too confusing for what it is. And, again, it makes Virus a balm to this kind of thing, because Virus is so easily digested. It's like energy came onto this boat, it's making monsters, done.
Well, and nothing class else. Of 1999 when we get there too, because class of 1999 is basically just like schools bad, gangs overrun them, teacher killer robots in there, things go wrong, that's it.
Yep, it's pulp, pure pulp.
Yeah. And it's an update on Class of 1984, which Lester had already made.
Yeah, it's a very weird, and I love that there's two films. I never saw the sequel. They did Class of 1999 Part 2.
Oh, The Substitute with Sasha Mitchell?
Yeah, I've never seen that.
It sucks.
Okay.
It's horrible.
That's probably why I haven't seen it.
The directorial effort of stunt coordinator extraordinaire Spyros Rosatos.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Not good.
Oh, that sucks, though.
Yeah, I know. And it's right during the time when he was doing stunts for, like, stuff like Maniac Cop 2 for Bill Lustig.
Oh, cool.
So, like, you expect something like that. It just never gets there.
Oh, it sucks.
Some decent action, I guess, but not really. Now, before we get to Class of 1999 proper, you want to just knock Hardware out real quick?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Richard Stanley's directorial debut. Super weird and psychedelic and hangouty. Also a movie that barely has a plot.
But this movie, I think, sings on complete vibe.
Yeah, right? Soundtrack.
It's got the Public Limited song, which is, this is what you want, this is what you get. Really synthy kind of vibe. You have, again,
that industrial synth kind of dark wave vibe.
Very much, which we both like. And, again, every dollar of the production design fills the frame. It's not a big palette, but there's an amazing opening scene out in like the zone. It's basically like Stalker or whatever, of like going out in the zone to find trash or find what you hope is worth money. Everything's irradiated. What I also found interesting is that how many of these films, while they were robot movies, because they're also kind of coming from Cameron, are these really anti-corporate. Anti-government things. That it's like the robot, it's almost an afterthought in Hardware. When all this, like the world that Stanley obviously wants to create is this really elaborate world. It's this pre-apocalyptic or like mid-apocalyptic, you know, the fall of the government, or they're now controlling.
Kind of Judge Dreddy.
Yeah, because it's like you can only have so many babies, which kind of reminded me a lot of Fortress.
Right.
And that's what I thought was weird about Hardware 2, is it felt very much like a pre like Me Too kind of horror film, because prominent.
Well, I'm just making that face, well, considering where Stanley ended up.
That's why I'm saying it's so weird. But this very prominent drill on this robot, which they showed a very phallic like.
Oh yeah.
Mixed with her having to deal with William Hootkins playing this peeping Tom, who is nasty as fuck. The things he says are like, I mean, you and I have seen a lot of fucked up movies. I'm it's like, gross. It's really nasty. He's got this like a he's got a giant herpes on his film. Fucking yeah. And he's like licking his lips.
It's gnarly.
And he's got a fucking like balding man bun, and it's. But what makes the movie, I think, again work is like it's purely music and sound and like beautiful cinematography and like awesome like brutalist futuristic architecture, and it just. Fills the frame with...
Well, it kind of continues... like, he would continue this aesthetic with Dust Devil.
Absolutely,
too,
yeah.
To where, like, that opening shot of the robot hand sticking out of the kind of desert in, out in the wasteland or the zone or whatever they call it,
yep.
The forbidden zone. And then the wind just starts and it blows away and you realize it's like almost like a Terminator hand. Like, that shit's fucking cool.
Yep. No, absolutely. And
but again, it's just vibe. It's like this and Screamers. If Screamers is a bad dream you kind of want to wake up from, this one is one you kind of are okay like sleeping with the entire time to where you're like, oh, it becomes a nightmare, but I kind of like it. It's weird and pleasurable in a very pervy way.
I think there's also like a wavelength to get on with this movie.
Oh, 100%.
I don't think there is one for, I think Screamers are just like, I don't get what's going on. This one is like, you kind of, you lock in and you're like, yeah. I've seen Hardware probably 5-6 times. I really enjoy watching it and actually has pretty amazing robot effects.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, the Mark 13 is really badass. I love the attack scenes are cool. To your point off mic, though, like one of the problems with this film is obviously because what it has in vibe, it lacks in pacing because the monster's there for like a long time.
And it doesn't do anything.
It doesn't do anything. And she's kind of like. Like, William Hookins comes in, she goes, hey, we gotta be careful. Like, there's a fucking killer robot there. He's like, oh, well, okay. And it's just like, are you guys, like, not scared? Like, what the fuck is going on?
Well, the one thing it does convey is that these people have already lived through the apocalypse.
Yeah, essentially,
so, like, a killer robot's just another obstacle in their day.
That's a fair point. And, well, and there's that amazing scene when they actually bust out of the window and they're on the side of the building. And it's pure on Blade Runner shot of this amazing matte painting extending what was probably a very small set of them fighting this robot on the side of this, you know, brutalist fucking apartment building.
Super cool.
Yeah, there's just plenty of shots in this movie that are kind of like all-timer badass, like killer robot, futuristic kind of dystopia, definitely, but also for Richard Stanley is a director reel. I mean, in the end, it's like he had a lot to say, but it's like, okay, but this is just like, look what I can do. And then he does, you know, Dust Devil, and then, you know, sadly with his attempted production of Island of Dr. Moreau, which is obviously, for those who haven't seen it, the Lost Souls documentary is fantastic and a great breakdown of what happened. He made it 3 days, I think, before he was fired.
I think it was a little longer than that.
But it was like
on set.
I think on pre-production, but I think they shot 3-4 days and he was out.
Yeah.
Like, but then he also, like, the story is he...
But he came back in the monkey suit.
Yeah, he was dressed up and being there.
Was sabotaging the set, possibly.
When Frank Oppenheimer was an insane person.
Yeah, total psycho.
And Val was at his worst, as was Marlon Brando. So just good times all around.
Bad movie. Don't know if you've ever tried to sit through it. Not great.
I saw when it first came out.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. Also, though, great Rick Baker special effects, though. Great makeup.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Good Ron Perlman, but it's a bad movie.
But let's get to the movie of the hour.
The Meat and Potatoes.
Class of 1999. Arguably one of my favorite B-movies of all time. Easily one of the best of these sorts of movies coming out of the 90s, which were sort of aimed more at video stores and cable, specifically HBO, because this was another one kind of like with Jason Takes Manhattan that we talked about. I remember seeing it in the TV guide, reading the description about killer robot teachers fighting like punk kids or something. I was like, whoop, got to see this at 3 a.m. after everybody goes to sleep. Set my alarm, came down, watched it. And the thing that was burned into my brain from like 11 or 12 years old on was when the John P. Ryan robot pops the drill for a hand and drills that dude's head. That was stuck in my little, like, prepubescent brain, like, just nightmare fuel from that point forward.
I came to this really late, so I didn't see it till I was, like, in my 30s. I remember just seeing the cover and being like,
oh, yeah.
And it, for me, it always looked like a cheap Terminator ripoff. And I think when I finally saw it, because I saw 1984, because Shout Factory put it out, I said, oh, this looks interesting. I'd never seen it. I loved it. And then I was like, wait, there's like a sequel, but it's, I was like, oh, I remember seeing that poster or that VHS. And I think the magic for me of seeing this in my 30s was, you and I have talked a million times about, we all hope as horror and like genre fans to like find that diamond in the rough that like,
sure,
that, but like they don't exist anymore. I feel like it's very rare that you find that movie. You're like, that you're like that the Vinegar Syndrome put something out where you're like, no, this is great. And I don't know why this was ever shown. It's usually like,
if mostly it's trash,
mostly trash. Right. And I like Vinegar Syndrome. I like what they put out, but there's just those times where it's like, there's a reason there hasn't been a version of this before. You know, we don't need a special edition. But for this was one of those films to me that was a complete surprise where I was like, A, this has a fucking budget, a surprising budget for this kind of movie. It's that Vestron energy. And then also just like amazing special effects and nonstop action. Like
wall to wall violence.
It's just, and it's like, but like sci-fi set pieces. Like when I knew I was in was the beginning, he gets out of jail. Main character and his brothers pick him up, or his friend, and his brother pick him up, and they're in this like futuristic kind of like frame car, and they did drive through this like literal war zone on the way to high school, and it's just this like Mad Max like car chase.
Oh yeah, we're
3 minutes into the movie, it's like holy shit, and then it just goes from there.
Aren't they driving a Ford Escort? Basically.
No, it's like a big Fairline thing.
Okay.
It's like a big, they have like a big, like fucking boat of a car. And then it just like gets crazier and crazier. And I think what I also like is it's a complete slurry of just, like you said, different influences. It's like Escape from New York.
It starts with Escape from New York text. Like it's straight ripoff about how
American schools are
now, there's like 500,000 like incidents of gang violence a year. The gangs have overtaken like all the schools in the United States. They're now like free fire zones around every school, which just means the police don't go in or out, which is totally Escape from New York-y. But it's done even in that like
same cop,
digital text and weird like robot voice, like a computer's reading it to you.
Yeah, it's just, it's like that, and then you have the warriors, because all of the different gangs have very specific looks. They're comic book.
Yeah,
you know, the black hearts,
very colorful,
and so you're like, cool, you have that. Then it's the Terminator, mixed with a high school kind of drama, you know, in the middle.
Well,
and drug addict stuff, like it's crazy.
Well, and also like his little brother is played by Joshua Miller, who's the kid from Near Dark.
Yeah, it's Homer.
Yep. And like
Jason Miller's son.
I know, weird, right?
Jason Patrick's half brother.
And our lead, Bradley Gregg,
yep,
is more or less like, is he a lost Corey? Like, I feel like he was a Corey that just didn't get the name Corey, because he's totally doing a Feldman thing the whole time.
When he does the like, get a fucking blanket, when he like does, it sounds like one of the Frog Brothers from Lost Boys.
Yeah.
It's like his version of their version of tough guys, right? I think it's totally right, because his career was so weird, because he's also an alum of, Nightmare 3.
Yep.
But he also showed up in stuff like, he was in Stand By Me. He's in Last Crusade, but never in like huge roles. I think this was like maybe his only starring role I can think of.
I think he's the guy who the Corey's market corrected to where it's like he's trying to break in on that. And it's like, well, we already got two of these. We don't need a third.
And he's like, I mean, he's pretty bad in certain scenes of this movie.
He's serviceable.
But he's serviceable for what he is. And he's like a, he's a good-looking dude. He's very like good on screen.
I also think he gets the tone of the movie exactly right.
Yes.
Is that it's so heightened.
Yeah.
Because it really is, to your point about the like teen melodrama stuff, I can't think of another example of a director, especially a director at this kind of lower level, making a movie in class of 1984, which deals with a lot of the same themes. And that's where all the teen kind of melodrama comes. Because if you go back and revisit that movie is even more of a melodrama just made as an exploitation movie, right down to the Tim Van Patten character, like playing piano in the middle of the class and everything. The Roddy McDowell subplot where he's like the teacher who's slowly been driven insane.
The abused Michael J. Fox.
The abused Michael J. Fox who ends up, it becomes almost like an anti-drug
after school.
Yeah, after school special for a minute when they feed Michael J. Fox angel dust and he climbs the flagpole. Like, that's the core of 1984. It doesn't really become a rape revenge thing until the last 20 minutes. And this takes that, and it's almost like I can't think of another director being like, I made this movie before, but now I'm going to put a different twist on it and update essentially like a pseudo sequel, but put trappings of another genre on it, because it's just layering this kind of grimy cyberpunk sci-fi kind of window dressing all over it.
Do you know what's really weird? And I totally agree with that, is because it's the weirdest sequel where it's the flip of who the bad guys are. Right, because the first one is like the teachers are good and most of the students are bad. Right, it's this the gang violence, and this is like,
well, it's like The Substitute with Tom Berenger.
Right, exactly,
it's the inverse of this movie.
But it's the same, almost the weirdly the same thing that happened with T1 to T2. Right, is who was your villain is now your hero.
Right,
right. So these like wild, and they also were very colorful gangs in the original in 1984. Is like, you know, Tim Van Patten and then Keith Knight from My Bloody Valentine and from Meatballs.
The girl whose name I can't remember.
And then Arnim from Fear No Evil.
Right.
And
they're going up against Perry King when they were really trying to make Perry King a thing back then.
Yep. And
he was in like Lords of Flatbush and stuff.
And he had that one Survive, something in Survive, really badass kind of like Vietnam, like post-Vietnam kind of character. But he... it's interesting that it switches that and makes you could see his thinking of like, oh, what if it was like the teachers were bad, but how do you make them scary? And it's like, oh, what if they were robots? You get it. But it's also, it's not even written by Lester. It's C. Courtney Joyner, you know,
yeah,
who did like
some, become a lot of a big Empire guy.
Empire guy. We watched Prison the other night, and you know, he did Lurking Fear, one of my favorite Full Moon features. And so it is,
like, it does super hot fucking Ashley Lawrence.
I was just
full Sarah Connor get up.
No, it's too much, dude. Like we were watching that. We were watching it at your old place. I remember. And I was like, I'd never seen it. And I'm like, first, this movie rips. Also, like, I didn't think she could be hotter than she was in Hellraiser, but I guess I was wrong.
You were definitely wrong.
I was incorrect.
Oh, you're thinking of Search and Destroy. Movie where he's the Vietnam vet. It's kind of like his Rambo.
Yeah, I like that.
Pretty good.
I like that movie. It was in a double box with The Glove. That really,
John Saxon.
I like The Glove.
Pretty good movie.
Very cool movie.
Very similar in plot too.
Yeah,
but no, you're right. I mean, you flip flop. The teachers are bad here. The students are bad, but they become the good guys just through circumstance. But we haven't even mentioned the cast of this movie. Is that like, you know, you have that opening scene where he's getting out of jail and it sets up the world and everything, but it's cross-cut with Stacy Keach with a platinum mullet and
with a rat tail
pitching, basically putting murder robots into classrooms as a way to like straighten out the students. And in walks the murder robots and they're fucking Pam Grier, John P. Ryan,
Patrick Kilpatrick,
which is fucking nuts. And like, you're watching, and the whole time Stacy Keach is like eating a banana, and you're like, what the fuck is going on in this movie? And then Malcolm McDowell is the principal of the school.
And he's, well, Malcolm McDowell, is, it's weird because he feels visually, he's bringing Roddy McDowell energy in a weird way.
Yeah, he's the Roddy McDowell character.
He's the milk toast guy.
You almost wonder why they didn't get Roddy McDowell at this point.
It would have been awesome. Yeah. Actually, one of my favorite McDowell performance, Roddy McDowell performances is 1984.
I think he's amazing. Great in it.
That whole nervous
breakdown where he holds the class at gunpoint.
It's so sad and like it's just like beautifully like McDowell. I mean, we just did the whole Apes episode. When you get him in a movie, it's gonna be better.
Yeah.
It's just
doing that in Fright Night too, he became an 80s kind of exploitation and horror icon.
Yeah, who just ups the ante of your movie. But no, and then you know, with Kilpatrick, here's this guy who was just playing fucked up dudes in all these movies, because one of my favorite roles of his is in Death Warrant as the Sandman.
Oh yeah,
one of my favorite fucking Van Damme movies, and he's a scary looking fucking guy. I remember when he shows up in Minority Report, and I'm like, kick his ass, Tom Cruise.
Well, and he has the whole fucking wrestling scene with Bradley Gregg in this.
Just beats the shit out of him and like breaks Pubbles his friend's
student.
Breaks. He's like kicking him in the fucking chest. Breaks that dude's neck.
Those are the funniest parts of this movie, though, to where, like, the reaction of normal people around this happening are like, you can't do this. Like, this is fucked up. Like, even the dudes in the control room when they're watching and testing the robots are like, hey, man, we need to turn this shit off. Like, they're going to fucking kill one of these kids.
And Stacey Keach is like, nope.
Let it happen.
It's what must be done.
He's basically the Ken Watanabe meme the whole time being like, let them fight.
Well, there's the scene in, one of the most classic scenes we haven't talked about is the spanking. I mean, John P. Ryan pulls this guy onto his lap and just robotically at high speed spanks the shit out of this guy. And
out of a grown man.
It's such a weird fucking scene.
A 26-year-old playing a 17-year-old gets spanked by John P. Ryan, who is no less than 58 years old in this movie.
But that's, to your point about Bradley Gregg too, is I think honestly every performance in this movie is game. Like Stacey Keach knows the movie he's in and also helps create the tone from the first scene. Like
100%.
Keach is the one who likes like, this is the movie. My personality is this fucking movie. And Mark Lester was good enough to get out of the fucking way.
Well, that's the thing about Lester is that like beyond even Class of 1984 and 99, he makes Commando.
Showdown in Little Tokyo.
Like these were the movies.
Firestarter.
Firestarter. Like he kind of specialized in this slightly elevated B movie that really did exactly what you wanted it to on the tin. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like it just, you read the description, you're like, Class of 1999, killer robots come into gang infested school, shit goes down. 93 minutes. Done. No. And it does exactly that.
I think you're right. And on top of that, he also knows how to get a couple moments in his movies. They're always like, what?
Well, and he goes so far over the top.
Because, I mean, the Commando classic scene of blowing up all the buildings, like, there's moments like that. Like, we were talking off mic, but, like, this movie is nonstop, but the last 30 minutes is
insane.
Is just nonstop robot insanity.
Grenade launchers, head drills.
Like, fucking flamethrowers.
Automatic weapons, dirt bikes in hallways of a high school.
I mean, it just goes up and up and up. And, you know, you think about the end of Terminator 1, of the way that they have to fight the Terminator in this old, like, in this robot factory. It's probably, what, a 10-minute scene? Imagine that scene where the robots won't die for 30 minutes.
With rocket launchers.
He does, like...
And also the robots in this, like, they start shedding body parts to basically have weapons for hands. Like, one has a drill for a hand. One has, like, a rocket launcher for a hand.
And a flamethrower.
Like, Pam Grier has the machine gun, right?
She has the flamethrower. And then John P. Ryan has the claw with the drill in the middle.
Yeah.
And then Patrick Kilpatrick has the rocket launcher.
It's like a turret gun rocket launcher thing.
Yeah.
But they're all awesome. They become like action figures.
Absolutely. It's all so something that like if this movie had been bigger, I would have bought a toy for.
Yeah.
You know, it's all like really, really.
Well, and the makeup is fucking cool too, because they're actually scary robot monsters. Like, that was the other thing that was burned into my head as a kid. Like, the half of the face being human, the other half like having those weird bulging eyes and like the sort of off green robot metal, the goo that comes off of them. It's just. They're really, the creature design is really fucking impressive. But it, and it's aged great.
No, it looks, and the final, because most of it is the actors with like makeup effects, you know, underneath. But the one is like Patrick Kilpatrick is the final robot they have to defeat is a full on animatronic mixed with stop motion.
Yeah. And it looks great.
And it looks like, and even though it looks a little bit dated, it looks so scary. To your point, like it looks like.
Well, and he does a great thing with it is he shoots most of it in the dark.
Yep. Oh, he covers it. Yeah, yeah.
To keep it, the parts that are going to be janky hidden enough or up to our imaginations.
And the ultimate, maybe, I can't think of a better how to kill a robot scene in any movie besides a forklift with a chain. And they wrap a chain around Patrick Kilpatrick's neck and use the forklift to literally pull his head away from his body.
Yeah.
As like, and it actually reminds me a lot of the head stretching in The Thing when Halloran's, his character is like on the table. It's like separating and goo is popping out of these like veins and shit. It's so cool.
Well, and again, he films it in a way where he has that overhead shot over the whole crane and, the robot and like it's pulling the head up towards you to where it looks like he's almost shooting it for 3D.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, he's a bombastic filmmaker. I mean, like when he's really locked in.
Yeah.
He just got a good eye. It's just fun. You know, it's pulpy as hell.
Well, and he gives you, again, he gives you what you signed up for. It's like, we don't have many modern directors who do what Mark L. Lester does. Like, that was the other thought I had while watching this movie, is because it's like he just shows up, milks the budget for all it's worth, gives you some star moments, gives you a bunch of gore and violence, and that's it. And then that's the other thing that's great about Class of 1999 is they kill the final robot and the credits roll.
Yeah,
and
immediately.
It's just like, monster's dead, end the movie. That's what he does. And we don't have a lot of modern directors who do what Mark L. Lester does.
We also forgot a very important part of this movie.
What?
Tracy Lynn.
Oh, yeah.
So she was also in one of my favorite movies, Fright Night 2. They were really trying to make her a thing.
Yeah.
I know she's retired from acting. She had a bad experience. But she's awesome, this movie. Like, as like a very unbelievable part is that her dad is Malcolm's principal, and it was like, I want her to come to this gang-ridden school where there's literally machine gun fights outside.
And she falls in love with a dude who just got out of jail who's part of the worst gang.
Yeah. The Blackhearts.
Oh boy. Well, not as good as, what is the other one? The Razorheads?
I think so.
Something like that. Something ridiculous. Yeah. They said their name the first time, I was like, say that again? The Razor Heads? Sure, why not? You want to get to questions?
Let's do it.
All right. Questions about Class of 1999. Martin, We're going to do it a little different this time. We're going to do top five Vestron Video Collector's Collection titles to kind of celebrate the Blu-ray line that Class of 1999 sort of inaugurated and was kind of a huge deal when this movie first came out. So I'm going to flip it to you for your top five picks from this catalog.
All right. So I'm actually looking at the list as we speak, and there are a lot of good movies on here.
It's great.
And a lot of just like very much the Secret Handshake kind of stuff, right? This is like the definition of like face melters. Number one is easily Extreme Prejudice, Walter Hill.
Ooh.
That movie just fucking
hell yeah
rips. We've talked about it before also on the podcast. Don't need to see much more about it. I love it. Number two would actually would be Class 1999. I just again love this movie.
That's my number one.
Yeah, it's I love it, but I mean like Extreme Prejudice, we both and it's kind of give or take. Number three would be Chopping Mall. I'm a huge fan of Chopping Mall. I love Jim Minorski. Great gonzo gory
rope. I actually think that and Blood Diner were number one and number two for the collection.
Yeah.
I think, know Class of 1999 was early.
Yeah, and Chopping Mall also about killer robots. So, you know, but a very different kind of 80s.
Weren't they actually called Killbots?
They were Killbots, and the film was actually originally I believe they shot it without robots. Like, and it was a whole like a lot, a good portion would be a straight slasher.
Yeah.
About a killer in the mall, just because it was like, oh, you know, someone's killing, and they're like, hey, what if it was robots? And then it was kind of like shoehorned in. But I love Chopping Mall. And then number four would be Slaughter High. Love the slasher. Actually, I own this disc as well. I have the t-shirt. The killer's named Marty, which always gets me. I think this movie also has one of my favorite Harry Manfredini scores.
Yeah.
You could tell they didn't have the money for any like party songs for like the radio when they're having the party. And they use one over and over again that Manfredini wrote. And it goes, and it's just on fucking repeat. And I remember one summer when I first saw it, I would just go around singing that around the house. My brother's like, What are you doing? I'm like, it's Slaughter High, man. Let it happen. And then I would say for number five, so many good movies here. I'm going to go Blue Steel.
Fucker. You don't even like Blue Steel.
I literally knew you were going to say that. I don't not like Blue Steel.
You don't. We have argued about this before. You don't like Blue Steel.
No, you didn't like that I had a gray opinion of it. But out of these movies, Blue Steel is still a very good movie.
No, you're not digging yourself out of this hole. You will not reverse history. I have recordings.
There's no way to check this.
Where would you have these conversations?
I don't know. All right, throwing it back to you.
So Class of 1999 is my number one, so I'm going to give you five alternatives. The Wraith, the Alien motorcycle movie with Charlie Sheen, awesome soundtrack.
Nick Cassavetes. Lots of
fun. Nick Cassavetes. Lair of the White Worm.
Ooh, good shit.
Ken Russell's other horror movie outside of The Devils.
Altered States.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how much I count that as horror. It's kind of sci-fi, but
yeah.
You know, but this is a Lovecraft adaptation?
No, it's a Bram Stoker story.
Bram Stoker, that's it.
Yeah.
Shivers, David Cronenberg's first feature.
Yeah.
Blue Steel, the movie that you dislike. That's awesome with Jamie Lee Curtis and Ron Silver in full psycho mode. And then Maximum Overdrive, Stephen King's killer truck movie.
I'm going to scare the hell out of you.
That he directed himself.
High on cocaine.
High on cocaine. Great soundtrack again.
AC/DC,
Emilio Estevez, killer vending machines. ATMs that tell you to go fuck yourself. What else do you need in a movie?
The giant green goblin fucking monster truck. Semi. Yeah.
Awesome movie.
Yeah. It's gonzo.
Double feature, Marty. And you can't say Slaughter High.
I wish. I was thinking about it, and I want to do with Class of 1999. And obviously, I was like, it'd be easiest to do another robot movie. But I was thinking about really good, pulpy high school movies. And I want to go back to our boy Albert Pyun with Dangerously Close.
Ooh, good movie.
I think another really kind of weirdly a similar vibe, but it's the opposite thing. It almost kind of reminds me of the Skulls, of like these preppy guys gone too far.
Yeah.
But sort of the enemy is more the institution, and it takes like the more normal kids to kind of, or actually,
like
no,
a rich versus poor kind of, you know, class movie too.
Yeah, absolutely. So
similar to that James Spader teen gang movie, Tough Turf.
Or like The New Kids, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What's the one with Lori Loughlin? Is that The New Kids?
That's New Kids.
New Kids,
also
yeah,
with James Spader.
Yeah, I like that movie. Maybe we were the bad guy.
Whole,
ooh, that'd be fun.
What if we did a whole like Teens on the Loose episode?
Oh, I'm in, dude.
All right.
There are plenty.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Including my double feature pick with Class of 1999, The Substitute, which is sort of what we were talking about with Class of 1984. I brought it up during that segment. It's the inverse of this. The kids are bad. It's basically like Dangerous Minds, only if Michelle Pfeiffer had machine guns and started shooting.
Yeah, and was not giving
teens
hope, but giving death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even give you detention. I just give you a bullet to the face.
Oh, man. And there's like four of those with like, because Treat Williams plays him.
He takes on the role after Tom Berenger. But I mean, the first one's still fucking awesome because he brings in like a whole commando squad at one point. Ernie Hudson's like the dirty principal. Mark Anthony's the main like bad guy gang leader in this Latino hood. Like, this movie just kind of rips, and it's the same. Like, if you had told me Mark L. Lester had directed this movie, I would believe you as well, because it's just right in the vein of, like, Class of 1984, Class of 1999. Diane Venora, if I remember right, is, like, the love interest. It's just incredibly stacked as a cast. Bill Forsyth shows up as, like, one of the commandos that comes in to help him clean up the school. And, again, kind of like Class of 1999, just has a real gonzo bug nuts last like 20 or so minutes. That's totally worth it.
Yeah. No, I need to watch. I haven't seen that in so fucking long though.
It holds up. But I mean, there's obviously some problematic elements to it. Like watching a white man come in and just slaughter a bunch of brown kids is probably the A number one, but you know, still worth it.
Or
the
just,
90s
or,
were a different time.
Or
man.
Just literally violence in schools.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's just not an image we want to.
Where it was like, oh, if they shoot at you, actually shoot back. It's every Republican's kind of proposition for protecting schools nowadays.
Exactly.
Why don't we give the teachers guns?
Yep.
That'll solve everything.
We should bring in
what
robots.
If we make Tom Berenger every teacher with a giant scar on his face?
Oh, man. It's been a minute.
Good movie.
And then remake.
Remake. Yay, nay.
For any of these?
Let's stick with Class of 1999. For the reasons you just laid out, could you even try and remake this movie now? Or would you get crucified for it?
Well, the movie as it is, absolutely not. I mean, hard pass. Also, just a lot of problematic stuff.
Yeah, like what?
Just, well,
the first rape or the second? There,
yeah, there's many. I don't think these kind of movies, I mean, they don't exist in the mainstream anymore. If you did remake it, it would just have to be, it would have to be very much the kids are all right kind of thing.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be gang kids. It would be like the nerdy kids. Honestly, a great double feature of this is The Faculty as well, you know, of just like, which I think ages better. Than
I mean,
this.
I don't normally recognize Robert Rodriguez in this house, but sure.
Nor do I. But I actually do like that movie. And shot right here in Austin. But I think you'd have to go heavily on that direction. A more simple, pared down. You take away all the sci-fi elements, the dystopia.
Yeah.
It would straight up be... And maybe you do something with, like, AI. You know, like, AI teachers coming in and going mad and, like...
Ooh, there's a good idea.
Yeah. So
the AI becomes sentient and starts killing people.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, yeah, the AI like is there to like teach, and it's like, we don't even need teachers anymore. And then like, turns out we know why you need real human beings.
Did you see that the AI bad guy in Mission Impossible scared Joe Biden to where he actually started taking AI seriously? He was like, we got to really look into this AI situation. after watching Dead Reckoning.
Cy Morales scared Joe Biden.
He's like, hey, man, the robots. Suddenly Joe Biden's having Terminator dreams.
Oh, my God. I don't really, I'm not a big fan of Dead Reckoning, but I love the shot.
You're going to say, I'm not a big fan of Joe Biden.
He's fine. But I like the scene in Dead Reckoning where they open that casket that Cy Morales is basically praying to his AI god. And it's like, what the fuck, dude?
I think that was the scene he cited in particular. He was like, you know what? No, there will be no god before.
What scares Joe Biden is what excites me. That's usually my litmus test. What do you think? Any chance of a remake?
I like your central idea of like doing something AI based. I mean, it just fits with the times. I think you totally could, but again, yeah, you would have to rejigger it just a bit to fit with the modern age. But yeah. It's like the thing I almost would like to see is another riff just on the themes. Like if you did a new generation of 1984,
the class of something, yeah.
You just do class of 2037, and it's like, what do we do then?
What? Because yeah, 1984 is like they're always in the future of when it's made. It's being scared of the future.
I mean, it's even that Alice Cooper song that is like the main theme of.
Yeah.
Take a look at my face. I am the future. Like he uses it as the theme song of Class of 1984.
Yep.
So Face Melter, yay, nay.
100% yes.
Yeah, 100%.
This is a
both
movie.
Both this and 84, I think, are both Face Melters.
In different ways, right? Mm-hmm. And they're both wacky. This one, it just never lets up. I mean, it is like the point.
It's pure entertainment.
Well, the point you made, I think, is true, where it's like, and it mixes what I think I was saying about like, it's one of those movies that I was like, how I thought I would have seen it kind of thing.
Right.
You know, and or I just seen that cover. I'm like, there's just no way that it's. Those kind of movies usually, it's what Grindhouse, the movie, tried to do, or this idea of, like, what if these movies that had amazing posters were actually good?
Well, it's funny that you say that. Like, for the review that I had of the screening that we went to, because I went and looked back to see just when it was with 2017.
Yep. The day before my first day at Parkside bartending, yeah.
I just wanted to see what I said back then as compared to now. And I actually said one of the movies that makes you realize that faux Grindhouse is totally unnecessary when you actually see the real thing.
Yep. It's the actually matches up to and actually surpasses what you could imagine.
Well, this is kind of the type of movie that Rodriguez was trying to make with Planet Terror.
Yeah.
Like this emulation of like a John Carpenter Escape from New York style kind of like knockoff.
Yep. And this is just better.
Yeah. Because it just rules in every fucking way. Delivers. Plus you have Pam Grier and Stacey Keach just going off the entire time.
There's something for everybody.
Exactly.
In Class 1999.
Well, Martin, this has been great.
Indeed, sir.
A quick kind of five from us. What do we got next for him?
We're going back in time to some prequels.
Yeah, I know.
And
some would say maybe the most famous of prequels.
You might say.
But you have to stick around and see what's next at Secret Handshake.
See you then.
Bye-bye.
said.